this morning is State v. Ron Keough. Are the parties ready?
May it please the court, I'm Stacey Kinzer representing Brian Ron Keough, the defendant and appellant in this case. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
From the Supreme Court's line of cases, starting with Roper in 2005 through Graham, JDB, and Miller, comes the principle that youth are different. Children are constitutionally different from adults for the purposes of sentencing. The attributes that accompany adolescence make juveniles less culpable, and they constitutionally cannot be held to the same standard of culpability as adults. In this case, Brian Ron Keough received an unconstitutional sentence. He will not receive a meaningful opportunity for release based on his maturity and rehabilitation. And the sentencing judge believed that under current Washington case law, she couldn't take into account the evidence presented at sentencing to show his rehabilitation and maturity, the factors that identified.
Yeah, the trial court actually believed was that, I mean, it seems to me in reading the record that the pivotal mm-hmm. decision was that Miller versus Alabama affects mandatory sentences that are life without parole, and that Brian Ron Keough did not receive such a sentence. Therefore, Miller does not apply. Therefore, we revert to statutory sentencing. That seemed to be the pivotal part of her analysis.
Part of it.
She did not feel she had a constitutional decision to make.
Well, I believe she rejected the constitutional arguments we made that Miller, Graham, and Roper and the underlying principles behind those decisions did apply.
Miller itself does not say that, though, does it?
It states that
Miller does not say life without parole or the functional equivalent or something that results in a geriatric release. It doesn't really say that.
It limited.
So the choice this court has to make is, are we going to stick with that sort of confining view of Miller, or are we going to go with a more expansive view of Miller that is reflected in cases like the Null case out of Iowa?
That's correct.
All right.
There's evidence, there's comments within the Miller case that seem to favor a more expansive view. The court does state that nothing that it held in Graham is crime-specific. Therefore, would apply to most crimes.
I wonder if you have given some thought that you'd like to share with us about what would you be advocating if the court granted your request for relief and sent Ron Keough back for resentencing. What options would the sentencing court have at that time? Would the court just make up its own sentencing law just for the occasion?
Not at all.
Follow Washington statutes?
It could certainly follow Washington statutes. I'm blanking on the number, the 535, the exceptional.
The one you argue at the end of your.
Right. It's not an exclusive list. There's a list of factors, but it's not exclusive. Other items or other factors could also be used to justify an exceptional sentence. And in this case,
under the Supreme Court's interpretation of that statute, the court would have to be guided by the stated purposes of the Sentencing Reform Act. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And so how would you work Miller into the stated purposes of the Washington of the sentence?
Well, the stated purposes include proportional sentence. The Miller factors do relate very closely to those, because the juvenile is no longer, once you are rehabilitated, are no longer a danger to society. One of the characteristics that make these factors so critical is that their characters are not fixed. They change.
We understand the underlying mm-hmm. science that is presented, but we have to be concerned about the law and future cases. And one of the arguments the state presents here is if you interpret Miller in an expansive way so that it isn't confined simply to a mandatory life sentence without parole. It's the slippery slope argument. In other words, if 52.5 years is too long, how about 45? How about 30? How about 25? How about 15? Where does it end? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean, I think a judge would always run into that. When it comes to a sentencing decision, that's why they need to be able to exercise their discretion, and it depends on the individual facts of the case.
Well, in Washington, typically it doesn't. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the Sentencing Reform Act, is to structure sentencing and to bring predictability so that people are sentenced proportionally in accordance with their the nature of the crime and the frequency of their criminal history.
Well, the factors under Miller go to the culpability of the defendant, that because of these factors, they are less culpable than an adult, and culpability is something that is relevant to the crime.
It seems like an awful lot of discretion. I mean, how would you suggest that the state of Washington avoid, or any other state, under Miller, going back to the kind of situation where the people, the young people who get the breaks, are the ones who appear most rehabilitatable? And guess who those happen to be? The ones who have the most money, the best backgrounds, and so on and so forth. How do you structure discretion so that it's fair? Under Miller. I mean,
under Miller, I mean,
constitutionally has to be applied.
I think it probably is easier in a case with Ronquillo, where you're looking backwards and you're seeing this huge change from the child who was immature and influenced by his peers, and then the adult who is responsible, who accepts responsibility for his actions. He shows remorse. He shows rehabilitation.
Well, what you're suggesting then seems like something in the nature of a statutory change, something maybe analogous to the Miller Fix statute, which would create which does create, I guess, a sort of a form of parole board. But are you saying that the sentencing judge in this case on resentencing could say, well, I'm going to posit the existence of a parole board, and I'm going to say that Ron Keogh will get a chance 20 years from now to show
no,
he's been rehabilitated?
No, because that's not an option in this case. So we're asking that he be sent back for resentencing based on the factors that were shown.
And so that means an exceptional sentence now.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Deborah Dwyer representing the respondent, the state of Washington. Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes said, hard cases make bad law. Mr. Ronquillo's case may appear to be a hard case because it is possible, though not certain, that he won't qualify for relief under the Miller Fix legislation. But this court should decline the defendant's invitation to undermine the purposes of the SRA by holding that trial courts may take into account, under the SRA, personal characteristics like age in deciding whether to sentence outside the standard range.
Miller says quite specifically, it says, Roper and Graham established that children are constitutionally different from adults for purposes of sentencing.
Correct.
And it seems to me that by what you just said, you're asking us to ignore that fundamental statement that they made in that case.
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. During argument already this morning, the Null case out of, I think, Iowa was mentioned, where that court struggled to extend Miller to sentences that Miller didn't directly address, a lengthy term of years sentence. I would argue that this court doesn't have to do that. Washington courts have long recognized that establishing the punishment for a crime is a legislative function, and unless the legislature does something that's unconstitutional, the courts don't intervene.
Well, the legislature tells us that we can't consider youth or age. Is that not unconstitutional under Miller?
No, it's not, given the Miller Fix. In the Miller Fix, the legislature addressed the problem in Miller, and it even went beyond it.
But as I understand it, the Miller Fix, that's a post-sentence opportunity to address that issue. It doesn't address the issue at the time of sentence.
Well, it really does, because at the time, say Mr. Ronquillo were sentenced today, well, actually today he'd be might be charged with aggravated murder because this was a drive-by shooting, but he committed his crime before that was an aggravator. So if he were charged with first-degree murder and faced a standard range sentence of, I don't know, something in excess of 20 years, under the Miller fix, in effect, his sentence is no more than 20 years. After 20 years, there is a presumption of release unless the board finds that the defendant is not rehabilitated and is likely to continue to threaten the public safety and continue to commit these crimes.
So is your suggestion then that Mr. Ronquillo be resentenced and given that option?
Mr. Ronquillo may not be. It's not clear from the record at exactly what age he committed the third-degree assault in prison. His trial was after the age of 18. I don't know how old he was when he committed that assault.
But if his relief under the Constitution, under Miller, is to be resentenced, then it seems like a pretty cramped interpretation of Miller, that the Miller fixed statute would apply in a way that he wouldn't have known that he had to stay crime-free at the time of sentencing. And
well,
so it's a catch-22 for him.
No,
unless
no.
He's resentenced and given a clean slate to be resentenced or to be looked at in 20 years.
Well, people who commit crimes that turn out to be strikes later aren't pulled at the time they're committing that crime, that it's going to be a strike, and it may be their first one, and someday they'll commit their third one. You don't have to have notice that there are going to be particular consequences down the line for
a
crime.
Well, this does not sound like an argument that has been briefed.
Pardon me?
It's
not a question that's come up thus far, no.
Well, it is a question in the sense that you argue in your brief that the Miller fix statute provides adequate relief to Ronquillo, whereas the cases cited by Ronquillo, among them are cases that say that Miller applies at the time of resentencing, and that resentencing is the relief that's required.
Well, if...
But you do not want resentencing.
No, and I think... You know, you're looking at this case and saying we want to, maybe you're saying we want to give Mr. Ronquillo some kind of relief at a resentencing, but in reality, he's one of the very few defendants who's ever going to get in front of a sentencing court. It was only by pure happenstance, by a case that was decided long after his sentencing that tallied up the Bro case, that tallied up the offender score a little differently under the multiple offense policy that gave him relief and got him in front of a sentencing court to start with. I don't think you should upend the SRA and extend Miller for what's essentially an outlier case. This doesn't happen very often. The legislature dealt with the cases. In fact, the legislature even made it all retroactive, and that's a question so far, too, that's undecided. Most federal courts have said Miller's not retroactive, and the Supreme Court is going to decide that this term. I think this court has to defer to the legislature in this case, which set up a sentencing scheme where people who commit their crimes before the age of 18 are not sentenced to life without parole. They're not even sentenced, assuming they're not subject to life without parole, they're not even sentenced to a very lengthy term of year sentence. They're sentenced to 20 years with a presumption that they'll get out after that. That's the effect of the legislation.
The thing, though, I mean, it is certainly a challenge to think about how to square Miller with the Sentencing Reform Act and with the Juvenile Code. But in many ways, it seems to me that the problem that Ronquillo finds himself in, or that the law finds itself in with respect to him, is not really rooted in structured sentencing. It's rooted in the decline statutes, because what happens is that you have Ronquillo who, were he to stay in the juvenile system, would have been given a sentence of no more than 5 years, I take it, because the juvenile court would lose jurisdiction when he was 21.
Right.
Isn't that right?
Right.
And so what happens, and then, of course, but if he goes into the adult system, and if he had been over 18, he would be subject to mandatory life without parole. Miller would not apply, right?
He would be subject to he didn't get mandatory life without parole.
Well, he was subject to the same sentence, I'm sorry.
An adult sentence.
A very long sentence.
Yes, but
okay, but so just to follow my thought here, It's the in-between. It's the fact that the decline system takes somebody who would ordinarily get 5 years, and all of a sudden, because they're declined, even though the person is 16 years old, they get 55 years. That's not necessarily something that structured sentencing contemplates. Decline statute is a bridge between the two.
Right, but the decline statute, ironically enough, takes into account everything that Miller said you should take into account. Mr. Ronquillo had a discretionary decline hearing at which a trial court heard all the information about his background, his age, his maturity, his sophistication, and I believe it was Judge Bridge who did the decline. She found that he should be declined and tried as an adult, so he really
did
got...
did not have Miller to read before she did.
But she took but all Miller says is you have to take those things into account, and she did take them into account. I really think that this court, I mean, I just urge this court to be really careful in this case and resist the urge to undermine the SRA, where the legislature has acted, unlike courts in other states.
Well, do we have to address retroactivity if we...
No. You don't have to address retroactivity at all. That's not at issue because he got a resentencing. But the legislature went beyond Miller in allowing relief for juveniles who had a lengthy term of years. Mr. Ronquillo has other avenues of relief. First of all, he would have the multiple offense policy, and the judge ruled in the alternative on the multiple offense policy and said, no, I don't find that I should give him an exceptional sentence down based on the multiple offense policy.
And that was before the Supreme Court issued its opinion in Graham, even though the court tried to anticipate that.
Yes, the court did anticipate that it could go the other way, that the Supreme Court could say the multiple offense policy applied here, and she ruled that it didn't apply in Mr. Ronquillo's case. There's also executive clemency. Gerald Hankerson is on the streets today, having been sentenced to life without parole, but given executive clemency. It's not common, but it's certainly not unheard of. He can
you
make
mentioned the Null case, but your brief did not address the Null case.
No, I didn't address the Null case because I believe that courts that have gone to those lengths to try to extend Miller beyond what Miller said have done that because their legislatures have not done the job. In our case, our legislature did the job. Our legislature addressed the problems in Miller. No person under the age of 18 now is sentenced to life without parole, or even to a lengthy term of years sentence. They're sentenced to either 25 years to life for aggravated murder or 20 years.
That is the case today. In other words, if Ronquillo today committed the same set of crimes at the same age, or somebody like Ronquillo, you're saying that that's the sentence that that person would get.
He would be sentenced to whatever sentence he should be sentenced to under the SRA within the standard range, but after 20 years, he would get the hearing with a presumption of release, except if he committed a crime after the age of 18.
I see. But in other words, that person would still get 52.5 years or whatever it is that Ronquillo got.
Yes, he would have that number, but the effect would be after 20 years, there's a presumption of release.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'd ask the court to affirm the sentence.
So the relief that Ronquillo is asking for would not undermine the SRA at all. It's based on the 94A.535. The list of mitigating factors is not exclusive, and it can include...
So this is the multiple offense policy that you're talking about?
No, actually, we're talking about the statute with exceptional sentences, and there's a list of mitigating factors, but the list is non-exclusive.
So what? Just that youth.
Yes, youth, and its accompanying attributes that make youth less culpable could fit under that statute. In this case, the judge didn't believe it did because of the
Hameen case?
The Hameen case, right.
So why was the court wrong?
Well, the Hameen case was decided well before Roper, and it relied on an analysis in State v. Scott, or it's cited to it.
Well, so, but we're the Court of Appeals. What do we do with Hameen? We can't overrule it.
Well, Hameen, the defendant in Hameen first was 18, so it's...
So you would distinguish it based on its facts?
You could distinguish it based on that, and it also was based just purely on age. And what we're talking about here is much more than just age.
Well, although you want to add youth as one of the mitigating factors.
Yes, youth and its accompanying characteristics.
So you want to...
And this is information...
Want new to add to what is on the list, you know, legislative...
Or make it... Well, I'm not asking to change the statute. I believe it can be included as the statute's written now, because the statute is non-exclusive.
And it would not be limited to persons under the age of 18 either, would it?
It wouldn't necessarily be, no. Well, I started to say in Hameem, it quotes the Scott case, which found that the argument that youthfulness mitigated his culpability bordered on the absurd. And we certainly have a different view now. We know much more from the Supreme Court cases and the brain science. And we just
have... But then, you're arguing Hameem's wrongly decided.
It's just because it's decided based on age, just as a number, as a chronological fact. It's not looking at all the...
so you're saying it's wrongly decided. And isn't that up to the Supreme Court to then address?
I don't think it needs to be overturned by the Supreme Court. I believe that it just can be harmonized with the new information and the more expansive factors presented.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, both counsel.